This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Not too far from the tall, gleaming office towers of downtown Charlotte, arguably the epicenter of the region of this region of the Carolinas, are smaller towns that ring the Queen City. Yep, some of those working downtown in Charlotte choose to live in those cities, which makes them, in a sense, bedroom communities. But leaders in those smaller municipalities are working hard to be more than that, to both maintain their sense of identity and to encourage economic development there. As Charlotte grows, so does the region, and that means these smaller towns are struggling with some of the same growth issues Charlotte grapples with. Today we're going to talk with a number of area leaders who know these challenges all too well. Jill Swain is mayor of the town of Huntersville. Good to see you again. Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Hazen Blodgett is town manager of Matthews. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
How was the drive? I'm just curious about this. How was the drive in from Huntersville and Matthews to our Spirit Square studio, Jill?
I actually think I beat the rest of the gang here. I got here fairly quickly.
That's because you started at 4, right?
Well, I spent the night in the Charlotte Hotel.
What about you?
It was great. I mean, it really was about a 25-minute drive. Wasn't bad at all.
All right. Bill Toole is a city councilman from the city of Belmont, which is, I'm going to say this later, so I'll say it now, one of the best-kept secrets in Charlotte.
We're going to change that. We don't want to be a secret anymore.
And your traffic probably wasn't hard to get here with.
Not at all. Including my coffee break, it was 23 minutes.
Look at this. And Mary Newsom is Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. You may know her from her years of work at the Charlotte Observer. Thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me. My drive was easy. and the last 10 minutes of my commute was by foot.
Okay. And you've been writing about this and studying this for years.
Yes.
First at the Observer and now at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute.
We're not going to count the years,
though. Okay, we won't do that. How big a problem is it for the towns ringing Charlotte to maintain a sense of identity? And is it important for you to remain Huntersville or Matthews or Mint Hill's not here, but Mint Hill, Pineville, et cetera?
I think it's very important. For us, it's also important to not be considered a suburb of Huntersville. Of Huntersville. We like to maintain our identity as simply Huntersville. Mm-hmm. But we are recreating our identity as we grow. We have new things that come in, and they become highlights as well, like Discovery Place Kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd add in that it's more than just identity, Mike. It's about creating community. So you talk about bedroom community. That's a bad word. Yes, we might be bedrooms for some people who drive into Charlotte. Mm-hmm. But they have to, if we're going to be vibrant and if we're going to continue for another 150 years, we've decided we need to be a place where people engage directly in the life of the community. So we make a real effort to make sure that folks, kids, for example, are making friends and the parents are making friends with the parents of their kids. We encourage kids to walk to school, for example, and that's been a tremendous success in bringing the families together. So there's more than just bedroom going on.
Now, both Belmont and Huntersville are a little further out and a little more disconnected from Charlotte than Matthews is.
It's true.
So how important is it to you, do you do it?
Downtown to downtown, it's probably 12 miles, so our folks are really pretty darn close, but we do have a real downtown. The town's over 125 years old, so we got a core, we got a farmer's market, and then, of course, we have Renfro's. So we got some real stuff down there. And then we'll have good festivals, and throughout the summers we'll have movies in the park or concerts in the park. So we really do create kind of continue, and people love it. I mean, mm-hmm. if we do something, families will turn out in Matthews.
Mary, you write about this, and you talk to people all over the area in these smaller towns. Does everybody share that opinion that it's important to maintain a sense of identity? And are they having difficulty doing that? Is it easy for them to do, or are they always battling the monster in the center of it all?
I think all of the above. The people I talk to tend to be elected officials or policymakers by and large, and they get it, that you have to have a sense of identity. And I would just add that that's true also for neighborhoods inside Charlotte. there's a real sense of identity with Dilworth, a sense of identity with South End, with Elizabeth. So
But if you talk to somebody from Elizabeth or Dilworth, or they'll refer to themselves to outsiders as Charlatans. Or,
yes.
I'm from Charlotte.
Yes. And
they don't do that in Huntersville, Matthews, or Belmont, do they?
Well, actually, I've been on airplanes with people and say, oh, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Charlotte. Oh, where do you live? Well, I live in Concord. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's – the different people have different visions of what is, quote-unquote, Charlotte.
Yeah.
And I think that the whole idea of the bedroom suburb, some places like Belmont have specifically said we don't want to be just a bedroom suburb. There are other places that pretty much do. Weddington, for instance, has – you know, they are all about residential subdivisions. And that if all you are is a place to live, then you are, by definition, a bedroom community.
Yeah, there are different economic models out there. But for us, and I think for the folks in this room, we're trying to create a sense of community where people have a view that where they are is a place to which they are loyal. And so, for example, in Belmont, we had the textile collapse come, and that wiped out our endemic workforce, just wiped it out. And so we're trying to recreate ourselves. And yes, there was a time when you could sleep on the street and not be bothered by a car in downtown Belmont. And that wasn't that long ago. And then we had some visionary business folks who said, I'm going to stop cars. And how am I going to do it? He created a coffee shop culture for us. And that created folks who wanted to go, kids mostly. They get those sweet coffee drinks that have ruined their teeth. And then mom would say, well, where's my kid? And she'd get out and she'd go looking for the kid who was hanging out at the coffee shop. Well, that brought folks downtown. Mm-hmm. That meant that the dress shop lady had something needed, showed up and had something for mom to do while she was looking for the kids. And then dad would come home from work and say, well, where's my wife? I want some place to eat. So now we have a restaurant culture. Well, you can't even find parking downtown anymore. It's a good problem.
I tried to get into one of your restaurants one night and couldn't do it. So,
Give me a call and we'll fix that for you next
okay.
time.
But so you have a slightly different problem in Belmont because we were a thriving mill town until the mills went away, and now you're trying to rebuild yourself. The other two towns represented on this panel, Huntersville and Matthews, have a different problem. I guess you're both grappling with the growth that's come your way because of the monstrous growth of Charlotte beginning in the 1980s to the 90s and the early 2000s. How have you dealt with this? The challenges that you face because of people moving here from outside?
Well, let me give you an example. Between 1990 and 2000, the town of Huntersville alone grew 728%. That's pretty darn huge.
And what drove that? Was it people coming to Charlotte and looking for a place to live outside of the downtown area?
At the time, in that decade, a lot of it was banking, Duke Energy. I mean, we have McGuire Nuclear Power Plant close to us, and it was also U.S. Air at the time, that we had a lot of people who were moving here for those entities, and they would come to Huntersville. My husband was one of them moving here. We moved here for First Union. So what we did in that decade in Huntersville is we redid our subdivision zoning ordinance to prepare for that growth, to increase the connectivity. One of the things that Mary and I were talking about is the fact that Huntersville was very cognizant of preserving our open space and rural vistas, because that has been an integral part of what Huntersville is all about. We have been a farming community. But remember, too, that Huntersville, Davidson, and Cornelius are split essentially by I-77. So that has been another thing that we have had as a challenge, that we have a community on either side of 77, and how do you bring both sides to feel as if they are one town?
Can you?
I think we can, and I think we have. One of the things that the Urban Land Institute actually recommended to us is that we do not identify ourselves as I live on exit 23 or I live at exit 25. Instead, it's Gilead
But it's kind of taken that route. And maybe that's the influence of people from New Jersey moving down here. They always identify themselves as what turnpike exit.
That's it, because that's how they stopped on the
exactly
way to Florida.
Right. Now, I remember when I first moved here, actually before I moved here and was working for another station on the weekends and drove up here from Columbia. We had a thing to do out in Matthews years ago. And I thought I was going to drive off the end of the earth. Two blocks down John Street, I stopped the car because I thought, surely the planet ends here.
Changed since
it
then.
Has certainly changed since then. What's driven that growth?
Well, you know, we are part of the wedge. I mean, Matthews is part of the wedge that's experienced all this Charlotte growth, and we did tap into that. Now, Matthews is as big as it's ever going to get. We've annexed all we're going to get. So we do have a limitation on land, but I think one of the keys for us is making sure we get the right mix, because if you have too much residential – residential doesn't pay the cost of services,
right,
whether it's city, I mean, fire or police. So we have a pretty good mix. We got about a 70-30 mix, 70% residential, about 30% commercial. Mm-hmm. So that's a good mix. So the next step that we need to take into to do is we're looking to partner with Mint Hill, Indian Trail, and Stallings to try to look kind of like what the northern towns have done and kind of come around together, because we don't have a lot of land, but we got a downtown. So it's, Stallings and Indian Trail, they may say, look, we don't have much of a downtown, but we want to create more parks. So what we're starting to do is do a little alliance with them to really kind of figure out how can we kind of feed off each other, because those four towns together, it's about 100,000 people in population.
In Charlotte, we've talked a lot about the importance of having the downtown core, the center city, whether you call it uptown or downtown, the importance of having it there. How important is that in a smaller town environment, to have that spot on the map?
You need place. You've
so
got to have a sense of place.
And I want to break in, because sure, I totally agree with that, but I also want to pick up on your description of the moms and the coffee shop. What makes that work is the fact that things are near each other, that things are close. You know, if you study cities a lot, you hear about the term propinquity, which means the ability to meet people in a close place.
You win the NPR word of
well,
the
day. Well, that's an SAT word, but Steve Jobs talks about it too. Yeah. He says you've got to create place for people to have that random encounter that stimulates something. It's
yes,
either the coffee shop. In our case, when I ran for office, I knocked on doors, and our sidewalks were not in good shape. Some of them hadn't been repaired since Hugo in 89.
Mm-hmm.
We've now been putting in $14,000 a year in repairing the sidewalks.
But you got about $1 million in need, right?
Oh, yeah, but it doesn't matter. The way you eat an elephant is a bite at a time.
Okay.
And I will tell you that the number of people walking on the sidewalks has jumped astronomically. And you see all kinds and shapes of people at all hours of day and night walking together, talking together. And that's another way of creating a sense of place.
And is that primarily in your downtown area?
And further out, too. Okay. Now what's happened is that's created demand. So now we've got, again, school kids, this is the high school, living in a suburb that is close to the high school, no sidewalk, and a delegation of neighbors came to us and said, we need a sidewalk. Well, that was valuable, and so it took us a while to reorganize the budget, but we put in a $60,000 sidewalk. It's highly used. And so we've again created space for people to have that random encounter that creates this sense of community. And then our idea is that then that becomes a lifestyle. And then you've got lots of entrepreneurs out there, these serial entrepreneurs, who want a place to put their family and who want a place to work. And then if they can, for example, get up in the morning, feed the kid walks to school, hangs out, makes friends, and that sort of thing. And then that entrepreneur hops on her bike and rides to the place where they do whatever. And then in the for lunch break, they take their bike and they go to the Catawba River and go kayaking at our new river park. And then they come back to the office, shower, and then by golly, they got to go to San Francisco at night fundraise. So they get in the car and they drive 20 minutes to the airport. They're gone.
Bill Toole is on the city council in the town of Belmont. And we're also here with the mayor of Huntersville and the town manager of Matthews and Mary Newsom, who is with the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Audi of Charlotte, presenting a selection of luxury vehicles committed to customer service and satisfaction. East Independence Boulevard, inside the 485 Beltway. Audi, truth in engineering. Information at audiofcharlotte.com. How do you make history come alive for students? Well, one way is through, believe it or not, music. And the Charlotte Symphony has chosen a pretty tough period of history to associate with music, the Holocaust. We're going to meet some of the people working to bring a new dimension to that terrible period in our history by looking at European music prior to and during the Holocaust and the impact that the Nazis had on free expression through music. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Senate moves forward on an internet sales tax bill. What the measure would mean for consumers, online retailers, and brick-and-mortar stores.
That discussion on the Diane Rehm Show from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Jill Swain is mayor of Huntersville. Hazen Blodgett is the town manager of Matthews. Bill Toole is on the city council in Belmont. And Mary Newsom is associate director of urban and regional affairs at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. They're all here to talk about the impact of growth and how to maintain a sense of identity in the smaller towns that ring this monster we call Charlotte, and how you deal with the growth that Charlotte has brought to these communities, because it's has been attracting for 30 years now people in hordes, and even during the recession it continued somewhat abated, but not completely stopped. We were just talking with Bill about the changes in Belmont to accommodate accomplishing a sense of place. Huntersville, it seems to me, might be challenged in that area. You do not have an historic downtown like Belmont, like Matthews.
We do. We do have a historic downtown.
Where is it?
See, that's the challenge. Right by our town hall. But what has happened, we have zoned for higher density along there. We're waiting for that darn red line to come to fruition. And we've been a little slower in redeveloping that area, but purposeful. The Discovery Place Kids that I mentioned, that has helped with the sense of place, and it has definitely helped with more and more people coming into our town center and more businesses coming into our town center.
When we've talked in this city about developing downtown, and Mary, you certainly know about this, we've gotten a lot of pushback from people who have not been downtown in 30 years and don't understand why the downtown crowd has to, you know, always ask for money for transit or roads or this or that or the other thing. Do you get the same kind of reaction in the smaller towns where perhaps you're trying to develop a sense of place and bring people back and give them an anchor? But they don't get it, and they don't want that. They just want their house in the middle of nowhere with the picket fence.
We did have a little of that. It was before I got there in Matthews, but we took a 5-acre tract that was downtown. I had a Harris Teeter that had been closed down and redeveloped it. And on the bottom floor, we have a library, and it's the third busiest library in the system. And that considers you got the main branch, and then you have 5 regionals, and the Matthews Library is busier than 2 of those regionals. So. Mm-hmm. We've created really purposely, and then town halls up above it, and then we have retail along both sides. So it really has worked to help, you know, invigorate downtown. And we did get some blowback, a little bit of blowback, but after people see that, that's gone away. In fact, there's been people apologizing for giving the town council a hard time about it.
I want to jump in here and talk about downtown Matthews, because I did a little talk out there last fall and did some research about Matthews and other comparable places in the country that were, you know, suburbs nestled close to the main city. I thought Brookline next to Boston was one example. And I discovered on an interesting fact, which is that Matthews now has a population that's roughly what the population of the city of Asheville was in 1920. And in the 20s, Asheville built this wonderful collection of Art Deco downtown buildings. Their downtown is fabulous. They were the same size as Matthews, but they thought of themselves as a city instead of thinking of themselves as a subsidiary. And I think it's going to be interesting over the coming, you know, 20, 30, 50 years to see which of the towns in this region, if any, decide, wait a minute, we are big enough, we can be a city.
Mary, that's an important point, because, you know, I've got a small Jack Russell. That dog thinks it's big. And small towns that have a sense of place and identity and self-purpose, they're going to think they're big regardless of how big – Charlotte is.
Well, that's what Charlotte thought, and that's why Charlotte is what it is today. And that's why Spartanburg is not what Greenville is today, because they didn't want to be big, and Greenville did in South Carolina. Let's go back to this Asheville example. It was the 1920s. Downtowns were important. They decided to put money in. I don't know how it worked, whether it was public-private partnerships or whether it was just a way to attract business, but they built these buildings that have become iconic with the Asheville skyline and the downtown area. Can you do that today? Is it important today to do that, as important today as it was in the 20s to do that?
I think it's more important.
Well, it's a great question. I mean, definitely people need to feel connected or part of something, because we've been talking to Stallings and Indian Trail, and like Stallings really doesn't have much of a downtown. The question is, do they need to develop a downtown, or do they just need to develop a really nice park that gives them the same sense, that gives their community the same sense of place? I think we all think, okay, you got to have a downtown. It's got to be cute. It's got to be vibrant. But maybe you don't, because that does take a lot of work and can cost a lot of money.
I know that, Bill, you got pushback on certain projects to improve your downtown. You just spoke a minute ago, Hazen, about getting pushback from some of the things that you wanted to do. And is there ultimately a payoff, either by improving the tax base and lowering taxes or keeping the taxes the same because you've got things coming in from other sources that you didn't have before, or just because the quality of life improves that people recognize?
Yes. Yes to all of that. You have to have visionaries. You absolutely have to have visionaries that stick to the vision year after year after year. If it's your town manager, if it's a citizens group, if it's the planning board, if it's your elected officials, they have to see the vision and stick with it. What we are finding is, because we have been relatively consistent with our desire to have a good quality of life to offer, we're also able to bring in corporations from overseas that will also enhance the tax base, as Hazen was talking about, and that's incredibly vital. Well,
and it's one thing that also happens is, if you have a consistent vision, then people become attracted to it, and that reinforces that vision. So, but you got to start with a good, comprehensive, long-term vision of who you are. That is
with citizen involvement.
You got to be walking the streets, talking to your citizens. What do you think? And making sure that it's authentic and it reflects who they view themselves to be.
Mary, talk to me about this, because you cover this from on high. Is it easier for political figures and town managers who are hired by political figures to do this, or is it easier to do what Charlotte did and have people like Hugh McCall and Johnny Harris and Ed Crutchfield and Bill Lee and people who had a vision for what they needed the city to be in order to be big in business?
Oh, I think democracy is not nearly as easy as an autocracy.
Is that what we were back then?
I'm not going to go there.
I'm sure we were.
Well, I used to refer to the seven white guys who made all the decisions.
Yeah,
it was one-stop shopping back then.
But Charlotte, you know, the voice of the people. In fact, if you listen to the voice of the people in Charlotte, a lot of the loudest voices were saying, don't build it, don't build it. Transit's a bad idea.
Right.
Don't put any money into your downtown.
They were wrong.
And, well, they were right about some things, wrong about other things. We can list the projects that maybe shouldn't have been built. But going back to your essential question about having a long-term vision, that's very important. And a piece of what should inform that vision is essentially financial. There's a guy in Asheville. He's a planner and a developer who's going around talking about what's the per acre return on investment for the development that you're allowing. And when you look at it per acre, he basically says, you should measure return on investment by uniform measure. You know, otherwise, it's like measuring your gas mileage by how many miles do you get to your tank. Well, your tank is a different size. So if you look at like a suburban shopping mall or a Walmart, if you look at it, the per acre return on investment, it's tiny compared to one, you know, four or five story mixed use building in a downtown. And he runs the numbers in cities all over the country, and the results are very clear. So if you're a town like Matthews, for instance, or like pretty much every other town in North Carolina now that the annexation law has changed, and your footprint is what it's going to be, you're not going to get any more land. And if you just keep building out with low-density suburban subdivisions, you're going to start losing money because you don't get enough tax returns from those to run your city.
And but it's more to it than just tax return, because it's also, does this fit with our conception of who we are?
Well, and I think elected officials now get that. Everything kind of goes through this economic model now. In fact, we've hired that firm, and that's what we expect. We're going to see. It's definitely going to show. Look, you got to be thoughtful about this. People are, you know, they like the idea of driving their car to a big shopping center, but what's the return on the tax value back to the organization? That you got to hire firefighters, you got to hire police officers. So it's really going to be part of everybody's model going forward, I think.
Adequate public facilities ordinances are more frequent, I think, now,
yeah.
too.
Talk to me about these towns' relationships with Charlotte and Charlotte's relationships with these towns. How would you describe that relationship?
So this is where we sing We Are the World, because we all get along. Is that what we're supposed
this
to
do? This is it. We'll all hold hands across the table.
That is it. Personally, as mayor, what I have seen in my terms in office is that the relationship in the Charlotte region with the municipalities and Charlotte have to be very close, and we have to think regionally because our borders are expanding or getting closer and closer and closer. Our needs are very similar, so we relate to each other very well. And yet, to your earlier point, we have to maintain our own separate identity. But I think we relate very well. We still have, in my neck of the woods, we still have some residents who say, we don't want to participate with anything Charlotte. And that's, I think, the older historical mentality. But I don't think that's – I think that's the minority now, not the majority.
It's been a great relationship for us, too, including Mecklenburg County. For instance, we have a sportsplex in Matthews that's being built. First phase is going to be finished in a couple months, and that's going to be built out as a $32 million complex with 12 fields and a stadium. That's going to be great for amateur sports, and the county is putting up $30 million of that, and the town's putting up $2 million. So, I mean, that's an example where they get it. We're all in this together, and we're doing the same thing with Charlotte on Independence Boulevard, because the next phase is going to be built are going to be in Matthews, and we're working with CDOT very closely to make sure it works for us and them.
I want to get your answer to that in a second, Bill, but I want to come over here to Jill for a second. When you hear about this sports complex, how much money was given by the county?
$32 million,
and the town is putting up two. Do you get jealous?
Heck no. We've got we have Bradford Park. The county look at us. We're giving the high five or the pound it. The county has assisted us in various projects as well. So we have Bradford Park. They support Latta Plantation. They support Rural Hill for us. Those are travel and tourism dollars that we get back. See, Mike, you were trying to start trouble, and it's not going to happen here.
Okay. Well, I'm going to jump in here. And the Kumbaya is wonderful. And in my observation, it's mostly true.
Mostly.
But I think that part of what laid the groundwork for that took place in the 80s, back when I was here, but I was like I was on the state desk, so I was paying attention to bizarre murders
in too.
Taylorsville.
I'm just kidding.
And you were too. Yeah, right. So
TWO, not TOO.
No,
all right.
No, I meant TWO.
But all the municipalities in Mecklenburg County all got together and created their spheres of influence agreement. Which basically, here's the land we're going to annex. We'll let you annex that land.
Right.
And they've just stuck, you know, they carved up the territory.
And stuck to it.
They've stuck to it. Now, Union County, that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so they had all these little bitty municipalities popping up in very rural areas. So they wouldn't be, you know, they didn't want to be annexed by Mint Hill. So they created the town of Fairview, I think. There's little towns all over the place out there that aren't really towns.
Right. And kind of like what Ballantyne wants to be.
Yeah, but without the buildings.
Bill.
Not linked to Charlotte, right?
I'd like to hear about the relationship that you have in Gaston County with Charlotte and Mecklenburg County and your relationship with Gastonia, because you're an adjacent town to Gastonia.
Well, we're in transition. I work in Charlotte, so I come in every day. And when I moved here in 93 and people said, where are you living? I said, I live in Belmont. They said, why? You know, and it had a very bad, it wasn't a pleasant reputation. And that's if they knew where it was. Today, people don't have that negative view about Belmont.
And
or
why did you move there?
Because it was absolutely wonderful. It was actually better location than anything I could see here in Charlotte.
Okay.
The people were great. And I said, this is a fabulous community, which I really wasn't seeing in the suburbs of Charlotte at that time. And so, and the commute was a lot easier than Davidson or Huntersville or Matthews, in my view. So, but what we now have is in Belmont, we have folks who live there, work in Charlotte, come home. But what we haven't done is we haven't gotten Charlotte to say, hey, Belmont's a cool place to go, really. So we've had to rethink how we go about announcing ourselves to the larger world, that we're a bit different than what we used to be back when we were a textile community. And so, for example, we're having a great big bike race, a Criterium, that's like the Presby was here. But that's going to be on May 4th. And so the demographic of these things is men and women between the ages of 24 and 55, median income of $76,000 or more, college educated or better. That's the spectator of who wants to go watch one of these criteria. And so we're actively marketing Belmont through an event to try and draw folks from Charlotte. Come out and take a look at us.
That's in May.
And that's in May. That's the first Saturday of May.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that if we can do this, if we can show folks who we are and why they might want to be here, that's going to help us with our growing our economic base. And one thing that I find interesting is that although we didn't grow in people the way some of these other towns have, our median age has dropped substantially. So that tells me that we're getting the families that we're looking for. And that's a major change.
Talk about growth, and because all of you need – you grow or you die, they say. And economically, you have to have growth. You want to attract new business, which brings people. It brings jobs. It brings money, obviously.
Well, but Belmont didn't grow, and we haven't died. In fact, we've rejuvenated.
Okay, but these other two neighbor or areas have, and, and it seems to me that you face the same thing that a lot of smaller towns face. People move there because they want not to be in this environment that we're sitting in now.
Yeah.
And yet the more people you attract, the more business you attract, the more traffic comes, the more people come, the more fast food restaurants, the more strip malls, the more this, the more that. How do you control it so you don't kill the goose that laid the golden egg?
Well, I heard a little saying a long time ago about Chapel Hill. People in Chapel Hill would say it was the perfect size when they moved there. And, you know, change is inevitable in the southern part of the county. I mean, Union County is fast growing, and a lot of those Union County folks come through Matthews to get to Charlotte.
And Mary has written that Matthews is at a crossroads where you have to – can it grow up instead of grow? That's the title of a column that she wrote. Have you discussed this in your town
meeting? We have. I mean, the issue is we are as big as we're ever going to be.
Uh-huh.
So we have limited space. We have a good mix right now, but one of the dangers with retail, it will jump. You'll see empty boxes.
Right.
And so we got to figure out, and, you know, some of the good news is we're headquarters for Family Dollar and headquarters for Harris Teeter, Conbreco. So we have some significant employers.
And Harris Teeter's for sale, isn't it?
Well, it's still there right now.
Does that scare you?
Well, I mean, it's out of our control in many ways. I mean, we'd support them any way we could. Mm. We do have an incentive program for business and industry. So, I mean, we have done some things. We've done some things to try to encourage people from an economic development standpoint. And, of course, the other part of that is land use. And we do have good, strong land use criteria. We make folks go through a conditional use process so that they work with the board and make sure kind of the quality is there. Because at the end of the day, I think quality is going to dictate length of your building or your life or your structures.
Hey, I think Hazen's right. It's quality. What do you do with what you've got? And do you make yourself as phenomenal as you possibly can with your limited resources? Could we all have limited resources?
That's Bill Toole, City Council of Belmont. Hazen Blodgett is the town manager of Matthews. Jill Swain is the mayor of Huntersville. And Mary Newsom is associate director of urban and regional affairs at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Sherpa, helping clients find talent by providing customized staffing, recruiting, and consulting services in accounting, finance, technology, and project management. Charlotte headquartered and online at SherpaLLC.com. The Senate moves forward on an internet sales tax bill. What the measure could mean for you, online retailers, and brick-and-mortar stores, coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. I want to remind you about WFAE's public conversation tonight on Charlotte's neighborhoods and the city's spending priorities with new city manager Ron Carley and others. It's free, a community forum that begins at 7 o'clock here in Spirit Square's McGlowan Theater. And you can find details at WFAE.com. WFAE.org. That's also how you can contact us, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks, or by phone, 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, and we are coming right back.
You've heard NPR be serious, and if you listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, you've heard NPR try to be funny. Well, now it's time for NPR to get funky. I'm Peter Sagal, and proud to announce that Wait, Wait will be joined by Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, as well as special guest Steve Martin, in our live cinecast on May 2nd. For tickets, go to waitwaittickets.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. I just want to point out that normally in the morning we drink a certain kind of – we offer the guests a certain kind of bottled water. This morning when I came in, there were these blue bottles sitting on the desk, and there's Midas spring water, which comes from Huntersville. Who know? Who knew?
You know, let me just say that that is an important aspect of the quality of life issue that we've been talking about. It's things like the Midas spring water or Yaw's Best salsas and products that if I as a mayor can help promote, that still helps our small town identity.
And this comes from an artesian well in Huntersville.
It's
bottled there.
It's the oldest manufacturing facility in Mecklenburg County, facility. So they used to deliver. There was a naturopathic physician who was in that facility as well. And again, it's these historical oddities or unique things that each community has that I think it's the responsibility of our elected officials and citizens to promote those to really encourage the quality of life and viability.
Well, we create – community is based around stories. Your family has family stories that they repeat all the time and you get tired of because everyone knows it, but they tell you who you are. And these traditions – that we each community has gives you a sense of identity, and you've got to repeat those stories so that everyone knows.
Absolutely.
This is who we are, and this and those stories inform us about who we will be because they get embedded in every story is a set of values.
But you can change those as well.
Always.
I mean, as you grow, your stories are going to change and you're going to add to them. One thing that Huntersville has been doing the last several years is something that we call Huntersville Connection. And I think that's very important because what it essentially has been is a collective of our local businesses. So we have our smaller businesses that get together once a month and our destinations, and they can help promote each other. I mean, how organic can you get, or more organic can you get than that, where when our destinations like Rural Hill is having their Highland Games or their amazing maze, and the businesses can help promote that, and they generate business as a result of that, and then
Jill, is key because that's got that's kind of like getting the citizens involved, only it's business. Everyone's got to buy into the same sense of identity. And then every time a business owner is meeting with a restaurant owner is walking the tables talking to a customer, that restaurant owner is reaffirming the place of Belmont or Huntersville or Matthews. And every time the shop owner at Jolie's is selling a dress to some woman who came over from Charlotte, she's reaffirming that. Or at our shoe store that sells running shoes. We got folks coming from Hickory to come buy high-end running shoes in Belmont. And so they're reaffirming this sense of place. And those become our ambassadors far better than anything else we could do.
You talked about telling the stories of these areas and getting the word out about events and things that are happening in the area. And Courtney on Facebook writes, as the editor of a local paper, I have to point out the importance of the community newspapers. You were in newspapers for years, and I know that the newspaper business is going through a tough time. Are the community newspapers going through a tough time, or are they like a link, a lifeline of sorts to the area?
I think it depends on the community and the newspaper, because any community newspaper is pretty wedded to the economic health of that community. In fact, I went to have a fellowship for a year, and I wanted to study the link between the decline in newspapers and civic identity and civic history, exactly the stuff that Bill was talking about. But what I learned was that that was on nobody's radar screen.
Well, I think it's not just – I'm a former newspaper guy, so I love print. But it's only 30% of the reader, of the population reads. 30% checks their information out by Facebook or some electronic media. 30% is getting it off of the television. Getting the word out about who we are is extraordinarily complicated now. And you can't say it's one way or the other. It's all of these different fragmented communication channels. And in fact, it comes down to, I believe, word of mouth, eyeball to eyeball, talking about what's important in church, in school, at parties. That's why this sense of community, I come back, walking on the sidewalk, talking to your neighbor, gossiping about who's doing what to whom, good and bad, that's what creates, that's what gets the information out.
But what is ironic, I think, about the community newspapers is that you'll have a lot of the community newspapers say that their most read section is the police blotter. But that brings it home. You know, they're checking to see if their neighbor's kid's doing okay or if they, you know, had a transgression or whatever. So there are some things that they'll focus on and others that they'll miss. The community events that we're having in the downtown area, they're missing those.
This is, you know, so our police chief said 2 years ago, we need a community police officer. That guy walks. And he walks through the neighborhoods. And that has been an immensely important investment in our community because that guy is out walking and talking and he's right. spreading information.
I think Bill is an even bigger proselytizer for sidewalks than I am.
I don't know how yours cost so little.
They're incredibly important to get people encountering each other face to face.
Well, and what
it's
we've
that,
seen.
That propinquity.
I
can't say it.
We built our first greenway, actually, partnership with the county a couple years ago. That thing took 10 years to get done, and people
fought it.
Yeah. They did fight it, and it is such a popular place now, and it's a connection to our town downtown, our park downtown, Stumptown. And so, you know, these are all the things we got to do, and traffic's just going to, you know, I hate to tell everybody, traffic's just going to get worse, and we're going to have to get used to getting around, either it's by walking or by bicycle. And I think greenways are going to be the train, mass transit, but we're going to have some kind of alternate way to get around the community.
I want to talk about transit in a second, but I also want to talk about new urbanism because you're talking about things that are all part of this new urbanism motif.
It's old.
It is old.
Old
and you, but Belmont was the first city in North Carolina to adopt new urbanism in 1991, way ahead of the curve. And we've talked about new urbanism on this program. We get people saying, well, you know, I don't want to live in a grid and I don't want to live in connecting streets. I want to have my cul-de-sac in the suburbs and be left alone. And even in town, when you go through certain neighborhoods in Charlotte, they have discouraged what new urbanists want, which is free-flowing traffic through these neighborhoods by putting up speed humps and four-way stop signs. They don't want people driving through their neighborhoods. They want to shut it down. How do you deal with that?
I just want to say that I think that speed humps don't prevent people from driving down your street. They just slow you down.
Only right before you get to the speed bump, and then you speed to the next one.
Right, but they slow you down better than letting people drive through at 45 miles an hour when you've got kids on the sidewalk. They're a traffic calming device as opposed to a traffic prevention device, like the no turn signs and the
I don't want to get lost in that, but I do want to get lost in walkable
neighborhoods. But your point about people say, I want my cul-de-sac. Of course they want a cul-de-sac because there's no traffic and you have a little bit of a sense of community there. You can have that sense of community without having the cul-de-sac, and you can tame your traffic by having narrower streets with street trees and bike lanes. People don't drive as fast on narrow streets as they do on wide streets.
Right.
And I think that people that say, I like not having traffic on my street, well, of course. You know, I like burning my leaves in the backyard. But when you live close to other people, what you do has an effect on other people. And when you prevent cars from going down one street, they're just going to go down your neighbor's street. There'll be twice as many cars on your neighbor's street.
And Mike, I think the issue here is changing demographics. I mean, my generation loves living in a neighborhood. My kids' generation, they're going to be different. And what does Matthews want to be? And I think what we want to be is first of all, I know we want to be vibrant in 50 years. And then I think we want to have a bigger tent. Because right now we do have a lot of cul-de-sacs, a lot of neighborhoods, but I'm sure we're not going to go in and say, okay, we're going to rezone this neighborhood, buy all the property, and create new urbanism. So what we got to do is take what we have available and create new urbanism. So really what you're going to have is a mix.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that's how it's going to keep us
mix.
Vibrant.
You need the product mix. And then people have a hard time, I think, imagining change. But once they see it, they can say, I like it or I don't like it. And a lot of folks like old urbanism because it's really 1920s. It's nostalgia that's been brought forward to the 2014 mm-hmm. period.
I think to Hazen's point, a successful community and one that will survive will have a little bit of everything for everybody. Mm-hmm. New urbanism, high density along the trail or along the transit lines, also the neighborhood, some neighborhoods with cul-de-sacs, a little bit of everything.
Let's talk about transit because, Jill, you and Hazen are both, I believe, members of the Metropolitan Transit Commission. You're on opposite sides of Charlotte. Huntersville may someday have commuter rail to Charlotte. Matthews may someday.
Thank you for your optimism.
That's right. May someday have some sort of dedicated bus line, which I don't understand because I think you should have rail too, to Matthews. How do you both view these projects and what do you think this area needs in terms of transportation to keep it attractive and vital? Because God knows, people coming in from Huntersville every morning and going back to Huntersville every night face a nightmare on I-77 every single day.
It can be a challenge. I think Hazen will agree with me in that with regard to the MTC, a total transit plan is what is essential.
Don't we have one?
We have one, but we've been working on stages. And what we have to do now is we have to look at, it isn't just the red line that could be next. It's got to be the completion of the blue line extension. It has to be the streetcar. It has to be...
You're in favor of the streetcar in downtown Charlotte?
I am. I'm in favor of a total transit system because everything has to connect.
That's the problem. You just hit on the problem. The transit system connects downtown in Charlotte, but it doesn't connect because your commuter rail comes in Trade Street.
No, you're absolutely right.
The blue
line
comes in further up Trade Street. The streetcar goes down Trade Street, but doesn't connect with anything yet.
Right.
So, I mean,
we have to be able to connect everything, and we have to advocate for
that. Isn't it too late for that?
I don't think so.
And if we built the interstate President Eisenhower decided to build the interstate highway system. I think we built it in about 10 years. It's continually being built, but at least it was up and running.
Yes.
Why can't we do that in municipalities with a transportation system that includes, obviously, roads, but also rail and other things?
Isn't that fodder for a whole nother hour?
Yes.
Because that is so extensive, I think, to answer those questions.
You're exactly right. And you know, is this region the top 10 metropolitan region in the country? I mean, you know people. I read a resume yesterday that said, I got family and friends from Massachusetts. I got family and friends that live in Matthews. I'd love to work for the town because we have an open position. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get that. Everybody gets that.
Yep.
I know we all get it throughout the region.
And the light rail is incredibly successful.
There's a couple of things that we have to
do.
Let me just throw in real quick and then I'll let you talk. The interstate highway system, it was either 80-20 or 90-20 federal money. The feds put up the money.
Right.
We'll be lucky to get half the money for our light rail system and no federal money at this point for the commuter rail or the streetcar. The federal government believed in its role as the builder of infrastructure in that era, and now they have dialed back from that for a whole lot of reasons.
Yeah.
The state, too.
Yeah, well, I just want to say that this light rail, it was very controversial when it came in, and no one could imagine what it would do. Now I got folks in Belmont said, we want one, too, and we want one that goes from Gastonia all the way through to the airport and into downtown. And that could not have happened 15 years ago until they saw it, or they went to Atlanta to a Braves game and they rode the Metro there and they said, wow, that would be fabulous.
Right.
And so you got to be a little bit patient when you're dealing with folk and you're trying to explain what's going on because change is frightening.
It gets back to the vision.
Speaking of change and transportation, since we have two members of the Transportation Board on here and we have people from three different areas, I want to get your take on the airport situation, transitioning the airport to a regional authority. There have been people who say that it's the outlying communities who are pushing the buttons here. Are you? How do you feel in Huntersville? Do you want the city of Charlotte to run the airport, or do you want an airport authority to run the airport?
Boy, the pressure. We have not been involved in that discussion.
What would you like to see? What do you think is important?
I'd like to see this is Jill Swain speaking, not from my town board. I'd like to see Charlotte be left alone.
Okay.
Hazen? Well, you know, I'm an appointed official. I'm not an elected official.
Have there been discussions at the election at the elected official level on this?
You know, specifically about the airport, I can't say we've had a specific discussion.
Yeah.
But there has been frustration about the General Assembly and their intrusiveness.
It's coming from your guy. It's coming from Mr. Russo, who's from Matthews.
And Representative Brawley as well.
Yeah.
Well, they live in Matthews. They live in Matthews. Sure, they live in Matthews.
Ethan and I were in an office together getting the pressure.
I think what you are seeing is a lot of frustration from the elected officials, local elected officials throughout the state of North Carolina, that the General Assembly is aggressively trying to manage local government, and we argue that we are the most effective. We're right next to the voters. Our elected folks are right, very accountable to the voters, and we can do it fine without their
Look at our growth. Yeah. We have done a darn fine job. We have people and corporations coming in over the last 20, 30 years. We've done very well and have not had the lawsuits that people are talking about that could happen. We're doing a good job.
Well, Belmont hasn't had this conversation, but I'll just say I'm amazed that the state legislature is taking away an asset that a local community built. And they're going to take it away and not pay for it. That's nationalism that you see in third world countries. Right. I'm astounded.
Tiffany on Facebook asks, is this cyclical? In the 50s and early 60s, we had active downtowns. Think of cute little fictional Mayberry. The guys playing checkers on the sidewalk. Floyd sitting out in front of the store reading the paper. Eventually, the enclosed malls came to an area and people liked shopping in a controlled environment. Hence, downtowns died. In 30 years, will this current movement just be old, dated, and die? FYI, I do live in the southern part of Gastonia, and I love going to downtown Belmont.
That's a merry question.
That's a call out.
Yeah. I'm going to say a word that y'all heard it here first, unless you read it in the New York Times. It's hipsterbia.
Phenomenon
in New York. The Brooklyn hipsters can't afford Brooklyn anymore because it's so desirable. So they are moving to the small towns up the Hudson River. And finding their own sense of community there, building their own, granola shops. And I think granola's not here anymore.
But whatever, you dated yourself there.
So I think Belmont can be the hipsterbia. And Belmont and Huntersville and Matthews can be the hipsterbia.
And with that, we must stop. That is Mary Newsom, Associate Director of Urban and Regional Affairs at the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, Hazen Blodgett, Town Manager of Matthews, Jill Swain, Mayor of Huntersville, and Bill Toole, a member of the City Council in the City of Belmont. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.